As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Starcast, the German football pod, brought to you by The Athletic. It's a season-defining crunch game, so what do you do? Well, if you're Borussia Dortmund, you play a weirdly half-baked game and concede late on against Eintracht Frankfurt to be 7 points off fourth place, facing financial disaster. But if you're Bayern, you eke out a gritty 1-0 win, Ottmar Hitzfeld style, even though RB Leipzig probably deserved the point. We wonder, has a Bundesliga matchday ever encapsulated the state of play at the top this neatly? We also have news of the Berlin derby, the first win for Borussia Mönchengladbach in 10 games, and another win for VfB Stuttgart against sorry Werder Bremen for you. All of this and more in Starcast. Hello, dear listener, and hello, Christoph Biermann, who's just about recovered from the excitement at Alte Försterei on Sunday to join us today. But before we get going, I'd like to tell you that The Athletic's fine written content is available for just £3.99 per month for 6 months at the moment. Go to theathletic.com/starcastpod to sign up. Right, Christoph, we already had the intro. You know what's coming. Is this the Bundesliga written large? Bayern get the job done, Dortmund just don't.
Yes, it is. You're absolutely right. Shockingly right. Bayern was so Bayern and Dortmund was so Dortmund. I mean, it was everything we've been talking about for weeks and weeks and months, and now it's finally settled. Bayern will be the next champion without only tiny doubts, and Borussia Dortmund will be out of the Champions League without tiny doubts. So what do we make out of it, Rafa?
Well, let's start with Dortmund first. I mean, it was a hugely disappointing performance. Yes, not wholly unexpected because we've seen it before, but we had also seen Dortmund turn up in one or two big games. I'm thinking about Seville, for example, in the second half of the season. But there was just this strange combination of being not really urgent, not really forceful up front. There was a lot of easy balls that they lost. It all looked a little bit, our friend Marcel Reif would probably call it children's football. a little bit too playful, a little bit lacking maturity, in fact. And at the back, they didn't have a terrible game against a very good Frankfurt side who had dangerous players in Jovic and Silva up front, but they conceded two goals. And the second one, as you said, Christoph, all but killed their Champions League aspirations. 7 points is a lot to make up, especially if you only know the word consistency from looking it up online. I was going to say in the Duden, but nobody does that anymore, right? It's
only online these days. I still have one, so.
You still have some books, yes. Yeah. So, where does that leave us? I think the first thing to say is maybe Lucien Favre comeback all is forgiven because it's not down to you or not wholly down to you. Or to put that on its head, Edin Terzic wasn't able to do quite enough after this rot that had set in over the years
And maybe Dortmund would have been smarter, looking back, not going into the third season with Lucien Favre in the first place, if possible, and find a more drastic solution rather than thinking a caretaker manager is just going to make a few changes and everything's going to be fine again. Let's start with the managerial situation. Is this bigger than Favre, or is this still Lucien Favre's Dortmund playing at the moment, and that's why we see these issues?
I mean we've been talking so much about this managerial problems at Borussia Dortmund, and now I in the end I have the idea it's not the core of the problem, because we saw that Terzic tried a different approach and he was in a way also successful with it. We saw more intensity from Borussia Dortmund in some of the matches. We saw them pressing higher, we saw them passing faster. We saw improvement by single players, Jadon Sancho to name one, Mo Dahoud and others. But in the end, it wasn't enough. And my impression after this, I find historic defeat, because it is really for Borussia Dortmund is a kind of watershed situation, not being in the Champions League, almost surely not being in the Champions League next season. I think they have to rethink their whole model. So what they had is this exciting young players, Erling Haaland, Jadon Sancho and others, with a mix of presumably more than solid international players, Eden Hazard, Alex Witzel, who is out for quite a while, Delaney, Emre Can and so on. And when you look at it, it actually doesn't work. It doesn't make a team that is good enough for what Borussia Dortmund is looking for. And when you were saying, or when you were quoting our friend Marcel Reif with this childlike thing, I immediately had to think of Erling Haaland in this game, because he looked like a frustrated five-year-old, because he wasn't getting the balls he wanted, and he had some chances, but they blew them, not in a terrible way, but this in the context with his father and his agent obviously traveling around Europe to sell him to Barcelona, to Madrid, or wherever else they have been, it gives a strange picture. So you have these talented players for whom Borussia Dortmund is just a stepping stone in their career, and you have this other group of players that is simply not well chosen enough to be of the quality Borussia Dortmund needs. And in the end, you have a mix and a team. I would wonder if any coach would get more out of them. And so maybe we don't have to talk too much about the managerial situation, about the coaching of the whole group, but of the whole philosophy, how this group has put together, and how it is, or the culture of the club in recent years in general that led to that situation. Or is that going too far?
No, I think, I mean, Dortmund themselves are aware of this problem, that their team has become quite transient, and transience is sort of the enemy of consistency by definition. I didn't write it in my column because I wasn't able to phrase it properly, but it reminded me a little bit when I lived with my wife in an apartment block. The neighbors were constantly going and coming and going. There was a whole big turnover. And now we live not far away, but in a house, and it's a completely different neighborhood. You know where the people are. You can rely on them if something happens. There's a much closer relationship. And I guess Dortmund's issues is maybe similar, that there's a lack of coherence because of that stepping stone nature of the club, if you will. I've called it sort of the Bayer Leverkusen of Dortmund a little bit, where they seem to be now in a similar situation at a high level of quality, but the structural issue is the same. The question is, Christoph, can they ever change it? I mean, can they become a destination place? Or does their position in the financial hierarchy of European football mean that they will always have to be a bit more creative? But maybe they will just try to change the overall composition of the squad a bit more, go a bit more towards having the seasoned pros rather than the high potential. But there they have to scout a little bit better, because too many of those 25-year-olds haven't really worked out. I'm thinking of Nico Schulz or Julian Brandt, for example, who both just haven't done anything really in a positive sense since moving, or not much, since moving to Dortmund. One more thing on Haaland and the Champions League and so on we need to talk about. By my estimates, they will at least lose 30 million euros from not being in the Champions League, but it could be, depending on performances, be much, much more. It could be 60, it could be 70 million euros. There's a very good website which live tracks the income of clubs in European competition according to the various factors involved. And they estimate that Dortmund are currently on 82 million euros from the Champions League in this year. Of course, if they go through against Manchester City, they would add to it. That's a big if, I guess. Leverkusen, the best placed team from the Europa League, who got knocked out in the 32 stage, received 10.6 million euros. Which shows you the enormous difference between those competitions. The question is, Christoph, I mean, you know the club quite well. What does that mean? I mean, will we see now them cashing in and say, okay, let's start again? No Haaland, no more Circus, no Jadon Sancho, and we'll try to have different type of players? Or will they try to continue more or less the way they were, trying to hold on at least to one of the two?
I think one of the big problems this summer might be that they won't even have the chance to cash in, or maybe only on Haaland, because he seems to be a big target for many of the big clubs in Europe, where you have the chance maybe to get a three-figure million sum in transfers for him. But I think they would like to get rid of some of the players, or maybe even some more of the players. But it will be almost impossible, I would guess, to radical overhaul of the group, and so this missing of the Champions League is even more painful, because everybody sees that there is a big change needed, and you do it from a position of weakness in a way, and not from a position of strength. And so I think there will be a lot of discussions within Borussia Dortmund in the leaders of the club, Watzke and Zorc and Kehl, Sommer and others, what the direction will be they have to take. But I think everybody now is aware of that the culture of the club has to change. And I think it has to do with the players and how they are chosen, but maybe also the process that has led to a lot of decisions that have been made in the past that now seem to be wrong decisions. And there's a lot to do for them, a lot of work to be done, and I'm really curious to see to what conclusions they will come, because I think right now they are not decided about it.
Do we give them any hope against City? I think Pep Guardiola would have probably said, or will probably say, that they're super dangerous, super
top
team.
Top, yes. Actually, no. I mean, there are very few teams in the world right now
that have a chance against Manchester City, and I think Borussia Dortmund is not among them.
Okay, well, let's hope for the sake of them and German football that we're both wrong on Tuesday night. Maybe they can surprise us once more by actually turning up and playing to their strengths, which are considerable on their day. But before we move on, I think we have to praise Eintracht Frankfurt. They weren't necessarily super convincing. I think Sebastian Rode himself wasn't sure about whether the win was deserved or not. He was very honest in that respect. But they had something quite impressive about them when it came to their resilience, when it came to their efficiency in the opposition box. I mean, this looks a lot like the Frankfurt under Niko Kovac, in maybe not in a football sense, but in the sense of their mentality and their attitude, and that I think you used to call it that muscular football, Christoph, but with a bit more refinement as well, and especially when Kostic is playing as well as he has been in recent weeks and did again against Dortmund. So this is a team that has arrived, that has, you know, done enough to now get paid its dues in a way. I mean, they're not there by coincidence, are they, in the top four?
No, and I like them because of what you already said. I mean, it's not a team that has an enormous amount of star players or so, but they are very much a football team that goes out to work, but also to play football, and I think one of the aspects that sometimes is underestimated is that Eintracht Frankfurt is ready to take risks. They are not there. They are mostly go out to win. I mean, that doesn't mean they are frantically attacking every time they try to overrun Borussia Dortmund. But they were always looking for a chance to get a go at the opponent's goal. And so in a way, they, I would slightly disagree with Rode, in a way they deserve to win it. And it was also telling that they more or less won it in the last minute of the game or very shortly before the end of the game. So, yeah, it's just a good football team, cleverly composed by Freddy Bobic as a sporting director, well run by Adi Hütter, playing muscular football, but also with a lot of refinement, good players, and they deserve to play in the Champions League next season. Absolutely.
Yeah, and there will be, unless there's some kind of dramatic collapse and a dramatic reprieval for Dortmund by way of some series of runs that they need to, a run of wins that they need to now go on. 7 games left, 7 points to make up is going to be difficult, I think. The same number is the number that Leipzig, in theory, would have to make up, or in practice, if they want to reel in Bayern, after Bayern won the top of the table clash in Leipzig 1-0, courtesy to a goal from Leon Goretzka and a fine move with Thomas Müller at the heart of it. Because we mentioned at the top that this was a very Bayern-like performance, almost harking back to the times when Bayern perhaps weren't known for playing the best football in Germany, but known for getting results whenever they had to, or mostly anyway. First of all, a bit on Leipzig. Was their game, which showed a lot of good things, especially in the second half, ultimately undermined by that little bit of quality indifference that exists between them and Bayern? In other words, did Nagelsmann win the battle, or a lot of the battles, but effectively they were up against an army that cannot be beaten? at least not over the course of 34 games.
It's a bit too militaristic for me. No, I don't feel offended, but it was strange, especially in the second half when Leipzig came back with a very cleverly adjusted plan, giving more depth, bringing in Kluivert and really they were really giving Bayern Munich a lot of things to think about and work against. And they were, I think, at a point they had 9 shots in the second half where Bayern had none. But I never actually had the feeling that they would score. And maybe it's a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy, because we people in Leipzig and maybe within the teams have been talking so much about their problems, converting goal chances, missing a striker, missing Timo Werner, and so on and so on. That in the end they were like all over the place and playing very nice football, but you were thinking, but you won't score anyway. Your heart is closer to Bayern. Maybe your impression was different. Okay.
It felt similar. I thought that Bayern were under a lot of problems, were under a lot of pressure. They spent a lot of time in the second half running backwards because Leipzig very cleverly played through that pressing, and then they often had, you know, people running at the defenders. But Bayern's defense held out, and you know, Kimmich and Goretzka played a little bit deeper in the second half, not by design but almost by default, because they were being pushed back. But it's a formidable obstacle to go past, especially with Manuel Neuer in goal, and especially if you don't have maybe a superstar striker and your wide players are all very good but not quite at the superstar level, at Bayern's level. So Leipzig did probably as well as they could have done, but Bayern just had a little bit more. This was a Bayern side without Robert Lewandowski. Erik-Maxim Choupo-Moting led the line instead. But most observers, I think, would agree that it was Thomas Müller who actually won the game for Bayern, courtesy of that fine assist for Goretzka, but also with his energy, with his work rate, and the way he kind of just keeps this team together, even in moments of adversity. Is it time, Christoph, even though Lewandowski's having this ridiculously good season, is it time that Thomas Müller should be valued a bit more in terms of maybe being seen as the player of the year, which he's never won before in Germany? And of course, as far as the national team is concerned, who crashed to a quite embarrassing defeat against North Macedonia. After we spoke last, we were a little bit too optimistic because the North Macedonia game brought back all the old problems, albeit in the context of a Germany team looking very tired. But still, I was so upset after the game, I kept on referring to North Macedonia as Northern Macedonia. So apologies to anyone listening from North Macedonia to the BBC that night. But yeah, Thomas Müller, discuss.
I would say that the Thomas Müller of this season is the best Thomas Müller ever, because he has added something to his game. I mean, we talked about him as the Raumdeuter, as he labeled himself, so the interpreter of space, and yes, he's in a way crazily and confusing for every opponent all over the place and so on. But there is a very mature element has been coming to it, and I thought recently about it, how good it is what he is saying after games nowadays. It was always okay, but this year it's so precise and it's so honest and open without giving away too much intimate details of the team and so on. So he finds the line there to frankly speak about his team and the problems that they were also having to address this in public without hurting the team as a team. And this is very mature, and it and this is mirrored in a way how he behaves on the field. I mean, in football, I think in basketball, there's always very often the talk about the glue guy, the guy who holds it all together. And Thomas Müller certainly is the glue guy for Bayern Munich. And coming back to the national team, I think this kind of glue guy is missing there. I mean, there is this fantastic group in central midfield with Gündoğan, Goretzka, and Kimmich, and Kroos, who was out injured, and so on. And they are all fantastic players with a lot of energy, dedication, and so on. But this little extra that maybe is even a big extra that Thomas Müller brings to the party, I think this is missing for the German national team. And we will see him at the European Championship. That's absolutely, I think that there's no doubt about it.
Joachim Löw cannot afford to lose out on him the way he's been playing and the way Germany have been playing without him.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Right. I think we need to move on from Bayern and Leipzig and Dortmund and Frankfurt. And first of all, mention that Wolfsburg wants more one against Köln to underline their top three ambitions, because they're going to be very difficult to displace now. Looking very, very good for them. Looking less good for Köln. But Christoph, of course, drum roll, the Berlin derby. You were there. How was it for you? It was a 1-1 draw. Of course, not quite as exciting as the last Berlin derby at Alte Försterei, which was the first one ever at Bundesliga level. I was there. You were there. It was very, very entertaining. How was it this time?
A derby without people watching isn't a real derby. But in the end, funnily enough, it felt like a derby, but a bit more like Kreisliga, because there was a lot of shouting and arguing.
Kreisliga would be sort of sixth or seventh division in German football.
Yeah, or close to Sunday football, I think. Yeah, so it was like a bit like a village football match. So people on the pitch and off the pitch being quite frantic about everything, but the football was terrible. I mean, that was absolutely terrible. I mean, Union Berlin had a good start, scored an early goal by Robert Andrich, who was the youth player at Hertha and was teased during the week by Zeke Neuendorf, the assistant of Hertha, that he would still be a closet Hertha fan. And Union had a great chance to score a second, and then they gave away a ridiculous penalty. And that was it. I mean, more or less, if we're talking about football, the rest were like 1 million duels and a lot of shouting. And in the end, Hertha had managed to create three shots. I mean, including the one for the penalty, and with all their star-studded players, where they spent so much money, they were parking a lot of buses in their penalty box. So, I mean it. I think for the neutral who was watching this football match, I think hopefully at least it helped them to get a little nap during the 90 minutes. Yeah, so a lot of effort and a lot of emotions, but the football was awful. Mm.
Is that point though enough for Hertha? I mean, do they think that it's 2 points between us and the relegation places, but we'll be fine. This point just helps us. And everything's going to be okay. Was that sort of the vibe you were getting?
No, I think Paul Dardai was actually pretty frustrated how his team played, because he said Union started like how we wanted to start, at attacking high up, confusing the opponent and so on, and creating something. But altogether, they were very passive, and he was also saying that that maybe it was a bit like the psychology of the situation, where he was saying, We were thinking too much, and I think there will be a lot of thinking until the end of the season, because I mean, they will surely be hanging around the relegation zone for some more weeks to come. I've been saying they have the most quality of the teams in the last third of the table, and I think they will avoid relegation. But they have to find back their nerves for the games to come.
Yeah, just to paint a picture at the bottom of the table, Schalke, needless to say, lost again. Although they were a little bit improved, and Klaus Huntelaar scored a fine goal upon his return to the fold in their 2-1 defeat against Leverkusen. The Leverkusen without Peter Bosch, of course, Hannes Wolf now in charge there, the former Dortmund under-23 coach and Stuttgart coach. Bielefeld, well, they're still a second bottom from the table after a 1-1 draw against Mainz. Köln, we mentioned, there in 16th, Mainz on 25, now in 15th, and Hertha, better goal difference in 14th, but only 25 points as well. I want to talk a little bit about the team above them, Christoph, a team that we haven't really mentioned much, and that's Werder Bremen. I think there was a sense, or, you know, a consensus that Bremen this season would be a little bit better, that we're beginning to see the work of Florian Kohfeldt coming to fruition, and that, you know, with maybe one or two additions next season, Werder Bremen would once again be one of the sides looking up rather than down. The game against Stuttgart, the 1-0 defeat, the manner of Bremen's recent performances suggest that maybe things were a bit too optimistic in that regard?
Yeah, they were. Florian Kohfeldt has managed to stabilize Werder Bremen, especially in the back.
But at a low level.
At a low level, yeah. But at a level that at least keep them out of the relegation zone. And I think that, honestly, it's a step forward compared to last season, where they had this relegation games against Heidenheim, the third of the second division, to avoid relegation narrowly. And maybe, yeah, people in Bremen or outside Bremen were a bit too optimistic about the possibilities to change for the club. I mean, they didn't have a lot of financial means to overhaul their Their team lost even with Klaassen to Ajax, one of their, I would even say, key players. And I think it's in a way it's a season for Werder Bremen to forget in a neutral sense. I mean, not in this, we have to forget about it because it was also terrible, but we can forget about it because it's not important, because we spared us the terrors of the relegation fight, but the rest was more or less boring. And they play boring football now, and that's interesting, because Werder Bremen for years, even decades, never played boring football.
And that is interesting, but maybe not in the right sense. things should be interesting. But I completely agree with you. Kohfeldt's football seems to go against type. Now, you can say that the ends justify the means in this regard, which maybe is true. Maybe that stability, maybe that ability to stay out of the relegation zone is all that's needed at this point. Two more things I want to talk about briefly before we leave. Stuttgart, first of all. I mean, they're in eighth now. 4 points only between them and the Europa League places. Do you still think they can do it? And what is it they do so well? I saw something very interesting from our colleague Christian Eichner, who wrote a piece on Stuttgart and the Bundesliga's sprints and running stats. And the point he was making, just to summarize, was that Stuttgart are actually among the quickest... the most intensive teams in Europe, not just the Bundesliga, with the amount of running and the amount of ground that they cover at high pace. Is that really the secret, that they just run a bit more and they just run a bit quicker than anyone else?
They also pretty well organized. I think that's even more important, because, I mean, all this running around and intensely running around leads to nothing if you're losing your head underway. I would compare the Stuttgart in a way to the football Julian Nagelsmann plays at Leipzig. So there are certain similarities. And it's not a surprise, as Matarazzo and Nagelsmann have been working together. They have obviously different groups of players, but Sven Mislintat also put together a team where the players are able to sprint a lot, because they have the pace and the quality to do so, and I think Stuttgart is a team with a future. I mean, the players are young. It's their first season in the for a lot of them is a first season in the Bundesliga. They are a bit like the rookies right now, but if they mature a bit, go into their second season, and so I think you can expect good things from them. I wouldn't say great things, but good things from them. So and in a way, maybe together with Union Berlin and Frankfurt, and so they are the team of the season in a way. How much they surprise us with their development.
Mm, yeah, I think that's absolutely true. Not the team of the season at Borussia Mönchengladbach, even though they won again, which is a novelty in itself. The first win in 10 games, a 2-1 defeat of Freiburg on Saturday. They're ninth now, same points as Stuttgart and Union just ahead of them. Is the Rosa drama now over? I mean, do now the players, the club, everyone say, okay, yes, he is leaving, fine, let's just get on with it, and we should no longer, you know, make such a big deal out of it? Or is the fact that Gladbach were having such a poor second half of the season also damaging him in the eyes maybe of his next players, that he comes to Borussia Dortmund not quite as the potential savior, but maybe as a coach that first needs to show he can actually do this? Are these next few weeks vital in that respect? Because I don't see Gladbach qualifying for the Europa League necessarily, but I see Rosa perhaps trying to have a different dynamic in those last few weeks?
I wouldn't say that it's vital, but I think it's in a way important that he leaves Borussia Mönchengladbach through the front door and not through the back door. And in a way, it looked in the weeks before that it was really more the leave through the back door, because the situation developed in a terrible direction. But when you look at the Freiburg game, I mean, they won it, yes, and it was in a way exactly the opposite to what we had seen in weeks before, where they played sometimes nice football, and at the end of the 90 minutes they were standing there as losers. And against Freiburg, they were not very good in the first half, to put it mildly, and turned it around in the second half, conceded a last-minute equalizer, where in the build-up of the equalizer, somebody was 5 centimeters offside. And so, in the context of Borussia Mönchengladbach, we have discussing the role of moments, the role of randomness, the role of luck. And now it feels a bit like, hello, luck. Back again at Borussia Mönchengladbach. I've been away for some weeks, but now knocking on your door, here I am again. And so that's also so part of the football. And now it will be interesting to see if Borussia Mönchengladbach is able to develop some energy from it and get things going to the rest of the season.
Absolutely. And it'll also be interesting to see who the new manager is, because Max Eberl is taking his time over the appointment. That'd be my last question for you today. Christoph, who do you think is in pole position there, and how difficult is it for Eberl to find somebody who is sort of at the right level for Borussia Mönchengladbach, a team that sort of are in between levels themselves? They are a team with Champions League ambitions, but not quite a Champions League squad. They want to go places, but they also have to be realistic. How easy is it, or how difficult is it, to find the right man for that kind of situation?
Yeah, and how attractive is it for coaches of that stature to coach Borussia Mönchengladbach? What I've heard is that obviously, Eberl is very keen on Henk ten Cate, the Ajax coach. But he has been working in Germany as at Bayern München, had been there the second team coach quite successfully. I think if I would be him, interesting question. I mean, the Bundesliga is much bigger and a more interesting competition than the Eredivisie in Holland. But you can play Champions League with Ajax, and you won't be able to do that with Borussia Mönchengladbach. Also, Eberl is interested in Adi Hütter, but would Adi Hütter be tempted to leave Eintracht Frankfurt at the very moment when they made this historic achievement, very likely to qualify for the Champions League? Difficult. So I think maybe there will be a gap between what Borussia Mönchengladbach wants and what they get.
And we'll be here to see how big that gap is in weeks to come. That concludes this week's Striker Spot. Thank you very much, Christoph. Thank you, dear listener. We'll be back next week with more news of this crazy, crazy league of ours. Until then, take care.
The Athletic.